live from the Nashville Sports Radio Studios. This is the Johnny Ballpark Frank Show. Call Johnny now at 844-5600 and online at WNSR.com. And now, here's Johnny.
And welcome to hour number two. Johnny Ballpark Franks with you. Zach Williams making sure everything runs smoothly. Don't forget around 5:35, Chip Towers. Chip joins us from Georgia. He covers the Bulldogs for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. Before we go to our next guest, you know, I go back to this game tonight between Carolina and Atlanta, Zach. And, you know, it was so close. Christian McCaffrey looked like he was making all the great strides. And, you know, they had until, what, 3 o'clock this afternoon to activate him off the IR. And just wasn't quite ready yet.
Yeah, if it was a Sunday night game, he probably would have made it. But with that injury, it's probably best to, you know, you want to get him back because the workload that they're going to put on Christian McCaffrey, which they do every time he's out there for obvious reasons, he needs to make sure that he is 100% healthy coming back because they don't want to aggravate anything or re-injure anything.
Absolutely. All right, coming up on Saturday, Vanderbilt playing host to Ole Miss on Halloween. Adam Sparks, he's the Vanderbilt beat writer for the Tennessee, and he joins us now. Adam, hope you're having a solid week, and as always, welcome back to the show.
I'm doing pretty well, Johnny. How y'all doing?
Good. You know, I started breaking down the numbers with Vanderbilt. A couple things stick out for me. First of all, looking at the AP Top 25 poll, at number 8, there's Texas A&M. And it's hard to imagine when we think about Vanderbilt, you know, they've got 3 games under their belt. And this was a team that had the ball in their hands, a touchdown drive away from beating that Texas A&M squad. This Vanderbilt team has managed only 3 offensive touchdowns the entire year. They're averaging less than 9 points per game. None of that really helps them with regards to trying to find ways to get W's.
Yeah, it's what, three touchdowns, 3 extra points, 1 field goal, and 1 safety. That wraps up the
That's not a combination for success right there.
No, it's not. And, you know, Ole Miss is second in scoring, I think, in the fourth in scoring in the SEC, and they're like 38 or something like that a game. They score more in a game than Vandy has so far in this season. So that tells you right there that this Vandy's going to have to change that to be in this game. By the way, Ole Miss is also last in the SEC in scoring defense. They give up about 45 a game. So, you know, if Vandy is going to score a lot on somebody, this is the game to do it because Ole Miss gives up points. On the other hand, Ole Miss can score points on pretty much anybody, including Vandy, that's given up 41 each of the last 2 games since that A&M game. So, you know, Vandy's probably going to give up a lot. They're going to have at least an opportunity to put up a lot. That at least would bring some optimism to the program if Vandy can score, even in a loss. And obviously, this is one of Vandy's better chances to win a game if they're going to win one this year. This game in Mississippi State, the next one, probably the best 2 chances. But if Vandy can just show some offense, you know, score in the 20s, score in the 30s, finish some drives, I think it would at least bring some optimism into this season because so far it's been, you know, in the first game it was, hey, you know, saw some things, saw a little bit of signs of offense and with a freshman quarterback, so maybe they can build on that. And they haven't actually built on it. They've been stagnant. They haven't gotten any better. And so they've got to do something. They have most of their team back from the COVID outbreak and some injuries, not all of it, certainly. There's still some guys that are going to be missing in this game, too. But offensively, there should be enough there to show something. Keon Henry-Brooks, who I think is their best running back, this will be his second game back. He was pretty solid in the last one. Javion Marlowe, one of their better backs, he's not back. But they'll have Wakefield, so they'll have 2 of the 3 backs. They'll have Seals out there. Their offensive line has been, for what they started the year with, has been pretty healthy and has stayed out of the woods as far as COVID after they had all those opt-outs at the beginning of the season. Their wide receivers are pretty close to full strength. Their tight ends have been pretty solid. Ben Bresnahan has played really well. So there's enough pieces there to do something offensively, and they're playing a team that gives up points. So if offense doesn't show up this game, I'm not sure if there's another game when it will.
And this is one of the other parts of it too, since we haven't seen this team on the football field in a couple of weeks. You wonder what the mindset is, and just behind the scenes, how Derek Mason and that staff are keeping the players motivated, at the task at hand. In this case, finding a way to be competitive against Ole Miss on Saturday.
Yeah, I think that's the tallest task of all for this team, and more so than other years. Every team's facing that a little bit. Maybe every team outside of, Alabama, Clemson, a couple of others that are still eyeing the playoffs. But, a team like Vandy, they've had, Derek Mason says, around 10 opt-outs. We know of six. There's at least a few others. Danny Clark, the backup or maybe third string quarterback, is still on the roster, but he's not on the depth chart. I think he's probably technically an opt-out. You've got guys that are kind of falling by the wayside, and that's certainly their choice to do so. But coming into the season, some of your teammates are opting out of the season. There's a psychological edge that's taken off of the team, I think, just from that. Then you've got injuries. Then you've got guys that are out for COVID and contact tracing. And so your roster, you're not even sure each week if you're going to play, because you're doing the counting to see if you have 53, and even when you do play, you haven't played well. There's a built-in reason/excuse if you don't play well, because you're undermanned. And you sort of know this season doesn't mean as much in terms of record as others do. I mean, there's going to be teams that go to bowl games this year that are 3-7. I mean, everybody's going to kind of go to a bowl game just about, because there's not that many teams to fill bowl games. So one thing adds on to another, and you got to ask yourself, how do you keep these guys into it for a season that doesn't necessarily mean that much, and for all the challenges that are already stacked on this team? It's hard. It's got to be a hard job. And you've got to really love playing football, I think, to kind of stay, to kind of keep an edge.
Well, and I thought that, when we look at the new coordinators, Todd Fitch and Ted Roof, and, the new assistants, I really felt like their enthusiasm could help this Vanderbilt team week in and week out. But, with the other obstacles, with the COVID-19 cases as well, I think whatever magic that could have helped the squad, I think that's no longer a part of the conversation, if you know what I mean. And it has to be tough for this team that, trying to avoid becoming just an afterthought, too, where people aren't even paying attention anymore.
Yeah, I think there's got to be, week to week, you're trying to get better. Week to week, you're trying to figure out how to get a win, and that's tough, but it's going to be more attainable, I think, this week and next week, Ole Miss, Mississippi State. But then I think you look at long-term with those two coordinators, if this coaching staff is back next year, and I think it, regardless of the record, I would be surprised if Derek Mason is let go after this year. If this coaching staff is back next year, they've got to figure out a formula that they can build on. And so offensively, Todd Fitch has got to say, hey, I think I can expand on this offense with Ken Seals at quarterback and with these other pieces in place. The thing is, some of the offensive line will be back next year. Almost all the skill players will be back. Most of the running backs, most of the wide receivers, certainly the tight ends. I mentioned Seals, the freshman quarterback. So whatever the offense is this year, you can build on that and bring it back next year. Defensively, it's somewhat similar. Enough pieces will be back. So you've got to not only find what works, but I think you've got to build some belief in these players that whatever challenges, obstacles that the team goes through this year, there's a path to getting better next year. And they've got to leave this season with that belief. Otherwise, you're in even a worse spot next season.
And, we go back to, with COVID-19, is the importance of what the record is, and whether it's 0-10 or 1-9, whatever this team ends up being at the end of the year. But at what point, when you think about the apathy part, where, you know, you keep saying that, you know, everybody just assumes Derek Mason will be back just because of the parameters that, you know, and all these obstacles that all these programs are facing with COVID-19 this year. But as far as enthusiasm and optimism from the fan base, I mean, you try to wonder what an 0-10 record would look like and how that impacts those feelings.
Yeah, I mean, it wouldn't be good, obviously. Now, you know, I think, you know, there'd be some fans that would look at it and say, hey, we get it. We get it. It was going to be a tough year for anybody. I think most fans would say, yeah, but you've still got to be competitive in some areas. And you're adding that on to issues that have been there for the past few seasons under Derek Mason. So it's not like he's a first-year coach and suddenly things aren't going well. There is some history there for people to be frustrated about. You know, you add on to that, there's no fans allowed in the stands. It looks like that's going to be the same case for Saturday's game. We'll see if that changes any in the games in November. I know there's some discussions about trying to tweak that a little bit. But it's just, yeah, I mean, it's just really getting through a year. And, you know, I mean, for the program, it's not like there's any money being made. So I think financially, you know, because there's no ticket sales right now. It's not like there's going to be a great financial situation if they wanted to pay a buyout to Derek Mason. So I think that greatly increases the chances that he'll be back. Also, there's this kind of understanding around college football that nobody is going to get fired because it's a pandemic year. Now, maybe a couple of people get fired, but not many are going to get fired. Will anybody in the SEC get fired? I doubt it. So if you think of what Vanderbilt's brand is, and they put a priority on health and safety and academics and all these things far above athletics, do we really think Vanderbilt is going to lead the charge of firing a coach in a pandemic year? That seems so off-brand to me. I just wouldn't see it happening, whether it should or shouldn't. I just don't see Vandy taking that step.
Well, is that measured, though, by, you know, later in the year as far as games 8, 9, and 10, as far as whether or not this team is showing up and giving it their all? I mean, if they've quit on the coaching staff, then you have to reevaluate.
Yeah, it certainly could. I mean, if you're getting beat 31-24 at the end of the year, okay, give them a pass. If you're getting beat by 50 at the end of the year, well, I mean, then you've got to look at it and say the decision's got to be made. There's certainly arguments either way. I think it's more of what Vandy would be willing to do, and they would have to pay a buyout. Don't know how much that is, but they would have to do that. And so, you know, that'd be a tough decision. It's also something to look at about whether or not they finish. I mean, you know, they had the Missouri game postponed, and that's now December 12th. Will they end up playing that one? I mean, is there a reason to play that one, especially if there are no fans there? Now, you know, maybe Missouri says we're going to sell some tickets, so we'd like to have that game. Is there another game postponed? I mean, if Vandy had played last week, according to Derek Mason, they wouldn't have had enough to play last week. They were fortunate to have a bye week, but that would have been two games postponed. So does this come up again? If it does, then Vandy's going to have to, A, look at a decision whether or not they play the full schedule, and B, do they fire a coach when he didn't even have enough players to coach in the games to finish the season? It's a lot of things stacked on top of each other, and Derek Mason knows where he's at. You know, any reasoning he can give that this is too hard of a job to try to win this season to turn things around, I'm sure he's pretty aware of that, but Vandy's administration is aware of that too.
Well, the other part, though, too, you think about Missouri. I mean, Coach Drinkwith, he is certainly, you know, he has his team ready to go. And that's the part when you look at a first-year head coach. I mean, look at Sam Pittman with Arkansas. So Arkansas, Missouri, two of the brighter stories in college football, not just inside the SEC, but it just goes to show you the right person with a program can totally change the culture for these programs. I mean, Missouri is fighting to the finish, whether it's against Alabama, whoever they're playing, and they're having success. And the same thing with the Arkansas Razorbacks, too. So that's two examples right there alone in this year, as far as college football is concerned, where, you know, two additions have certainly totally changed overnight the culture for these football programs.
Oh, sure. And I think, you know, if you hire the right guy, that's what happens. And I'm sure this will be a topic. If Derek Mason is let go this year, next year, you know, a year and a half from now, then, you know, this conversation obviously we'll have several times over. My take on coaching changes is that you almost always get a bump in terms of energy and performance and enthusiasm and all that when you change head coach, well, at least when you fire one and you hire another. I think you always get that in the first season, certainly in the first month of someone's tenure. I think the real judge is how that goes down in year two and three. So, you know, Mike Leach went out and looked great, and they beat LSU. Now Mississippi State's looking a little more like dumpster fire than they do, you know, a team that can compete in the SEC. There's a lot of issues on that team and that program. And, you know, a year from now, does that look like a good hire? I'm not so sure. So, yes, I mean, if Vandy changed coaches, let's say a year and a half from now, would it the culture change? I don't know long term. Would the team have new energy and enthusiasm? Almost certainly, because that almost always happens when you change coaches.
I mean, I just look at this list where Derek Mason, 27 wins. So he's in his seventh year as head coach of Vanderbilt and 27 wins. And that's where it's like, okay, not a lot of Saturdays where fans of Vanderbilt can be happy and ecstatic. You know, there's been some moments and some wins against top 25 teams, too. Like we go back to a win over Kansas State back in 2017. But you get to the point where you're asking a little bit too much out of that fan base with not enough rewards as far as successes on Saturdays.
Yeah, that's right. There's not many rewards lately. And that was kind of the thing, really, the last 3 years, maybe 4 years with Derek Mason, is that he needed something to keep people still interested, still with hope that things would turn around. That, for 3 years in a row, was beating Tennessee, beating Georgia that year. That gave people a little something. Beating Kansas State, a ranked team, gave people a little something. There was at least something almost every year to say, maybe. Let's give him another year, maybe. At this point, after how last season went and how this season has started off and certainly looks to be headed, there's not that many opportunities to get that. Now, go and beat the Vols again, I'm sure that'll get some people excited again, but there's not going to be that many opportunities. And the idea of kind of rebooting with new coordinators and a new quarterback with Ken Seals, In a regular year where you had non-conference games and you could put up some big numbers in a couple of games and win some non-conference games and maybe pile up four or five, maybe six wins, that was maybe doable. You're not going to have that chance this year in this conference schedule. And, you know, I don't know what they would do in a regular year, but they just don't have a regular year, so there's not going to really be opportunities to give people more hope this year. Derek's just going to have to hope that they want to hold off on the buyout for another year, and he gets a kind of one last chance next season.
Before we let you go, Vanderbilt, as far as when looking at their 2021 recruiting class, one of their top-rated commits has reopened his recruitment. And when you talk about a player, in this case, a wide receiver out of Louisiana, and you're getting an offer from, oh, by the way, LSU, you know, it's hard pressed for somebody like that to turn down the home state squad.
Yeah, he's from Lafayette. I believe he got an offer from, like you said, LSU, and I don't know why a kid would not change his mind in that circumstance. And I know Vandy fans don't like to hear that, but you know that's just the way it is. And it's a defending national champion, and it's in your home state. You know, Vandy is almost always going to get, they have to get three-star players and maybe sprinkle in a couple of four-stars. Derek Mason of late has gotten all three-stars and really very, very few four-stars. And that's sort of the difference between, you know, some of James Franklin classes and his. Vandy is never going to be a school that just racks up a lot of four-stars. It's not going to happen. They have to be strategic with their recruiting. And, you know, there's a fine line between good and bad recruiting classes with them. And, that, again, that goes back to even Franklin's classes. some of his better teams were not built on his recruits. They were built on Bobby Johnson's recruits. And Derek Mason has not had good enough numbers of difference-making players to do it. He's had a few, but not enough.
Always a pleasure. Adam, before we let you go, remind the listeners again the best ways to keep up with your coverage of the Commodores.
Yep, online, Tennessean.com, in print, the Tennessean, and on Twitter, at Adam Sparks.
Hey, Adam, thank you. Have a good rest of the week. We'll look forward to talking to you again next week.
Same to you, Johnny. We'll see you.
Thank you. That's Adam Sparks with the Tennessean. Yeah, the young man, by the way, Zach, we're talking about out of Lafayette, Louisiana, Jack Beck. He was a three-star commitment, so he gets the offer from LSU, and you know that when you're growing up inside the state and you're talking about a team that won the national championship and you have played yourself into the position where all of a sudden now LSU is noticing you, it's tough to all of a sudden say, no, I'm good, I'm going to stay with Vanderbilt. Although, you know, and you know, we have seen time and time again where these student athletes you know, have the loyalty factor for those that were on board from the beginning, per se.
Well, let's be honest. It's tough to stay with Vanderbilt the way it is right now, too. I mean, that's the other side of all this.
Yeah, and I hate seeing this because I go back, you know, we were talking about 2016, and we think about how, you know, what a fun year that was, and with wins against Georgia and Tennessee and all that particular season. In fact, you know, back-to-back years where you're talking about a combined 11 wins in 2016 and 17. But, you know, 2016 to me was the potential then to build from that and move forward. But, you know, like on defense, never a replacement for, you know, I look at the defense for Vanderbilt and, you know, you didn't replace Adam Butler or Zach Cunningham. And when you have two outstanding talents like that was leading your defense, it's you know, you just can't, you're not, it's not like Alabama where you're just replacing all Americans with all Americans, five stars with five stars. Vanderbilt to me, you know, never were able to replace that kind of talent, especially right there up the middle in that defense.
Oh, for sure. And I mean, this is, we know the bigger problem there is not, you know, being able to bring talent in. It's just going, it seems like they don't go and find talent. That's where I think a lot of it is, and they don't use their resources properly.
Well, but then again, though, behind the scenes, how much is being allocated? We always talk about, I mean, Georgia, you know, they keep getting a bump of $1 million more in recruiting just to be able to keep up and try to stay ahead of Alabama. So some programs even already getting tremendous funding as far as from a recruitment standpoint, still get more. You wonder when you think about Vanderbilt, knowing what they have to deal with regards to recruiting, knowing that their landscape and footprint has to be West Coast to East Coast. You know, to me, that is one of the areas where, you know, and we don't know exactly how much money is being allocated as far as recruiting. But you know, you need to spend more just to be able to compete inside the SEC.
And that opens up the even bigger problem for Vanderbilt, right? It's the unknown but known idea that they do not care about their athletics.
Well, it's to the point where what is that success? You know, what are you trying to accomplish? What do you want that to be as far as football?
Have a football team.
Well, no, they want to have a football team, but they don't. I mean, but for to be a quote unquote big time football program, you know, is it worth the commitment? And that's and from a financial standpoint, and that's the part where behind the scenes we don't know the answers.
You know, the crazy part is that they are able to do something that no other team in the SEC is able to do. Their problem is the easiest one to fix out of all the other ones. Scholastically, of course, they're going to have the better numbers, so they can provide an education that is going to go way past any other degree that you're going to get in the SEC.
That is your number one sales tool right there.
You know, they can fix everything. If they just took a five-year approach to bringing back all the athletics to where they should be to be competitive in the SEC, then they would be a highly desirable place to come play football and live, because you have Nashville already here. It's the best place to live anyway. And then you have a great education system. And then you have also a dominant football program, that everybody would want to come here for all those reasons. seasons. It makes too much sense.
I mean, look, Stanford's having, you know, we look at what Stanford has done with the success they've had in the Pac-12. It's not like the expectations for this team is to go 9-3 and then win a bowl game to go 10-3. You know, that's not what the expectations are. And so that's the part. I know one thing, the expectations are certainly higher than having 3 offensive touchdowns scored in 3 weeks and averaging less than 9 points per game. And you're ranked 97th in the country in scoring offense. I mean, it's got to be something more than that.
Yeah, I mean, it has to be that you can't be in the SEC and be like that. That's impossible.
Like, you know, honestly, that's like going to a steak restaurant and they don't have steak. I mean, it's like
going to a steak restaurant, ordering a steak, getting it medium rare. You got a side of potatoes, and they bring out a birthday cake. That's what it's like. And you're like, whoa. They're like, just eat it. It's birthday cake, you know? And it's like, no, I ordered a steak and potatoes and all this sour cream. Where did you give me a birthday cake? And then it's like, oh, no, too bad. And they walk away, and then you're sitting there with a birthday cake.
And the bad restaurant song, too.
Yeah, and then you know what you have to, you know what you're going to do? You're going to eat that birthday cake because it's birthday cake. Everybody loves birthday cake. And then you're forced to eat birthday cake over and over every time you go to the same restaurant, ordering steak, getting birthday cake. That's Vanderbilt football in a nutshell.
By the way, if you're going to be hanging out with friends this weekend watching football, the bottom line is this. If you've been drinking, don't get behind the wheel. You know, on average, a DUI can set you back $10,000. It can also cost you your life. So remember, if you've been drinking, don't get behind the wheel. Remember, fans don't let fans drive drunk. This message brought to you by the Tennessee Highway Safety Office.
Good afternoon. We're still looking live at this crash here on Briley Parkway westbound, right at Gallatin Pike. Again, it's up against the wall here. Hopefully, they'll move it sooner than later here on Briley Parkway, again at Gallatin Pike. 4300 block of Lebanon Pike. Still over there working that accident. Still heavy traffic to the south, 65 down into Williamson County, all the way into Spring Hill. Check out the Andre Chicken Sandwich, now available at Prince's Hot Chicken, 5814 Nolensville Pike. I'm Commander Chuck, your on-time traffic.
George Plaster and Watson Brown to talk with you about a friend of ours, Jody Jones Dentistry. And Watson, we've both visited this beautiful new studio he has in the Music Row area. Man, it is spectacular.
It sure is. And I've known Jody George since he was a kid. His mom and dad, Doug and Lucy, are as good of friends as I have. It was an honor to coach Jody at Vanderbilt. And Jody was one of those tough guys, very smart, highly competitive, unbelievable work ethic. It does not surprise me that he's had a wonderful dentist practice as he does.
22 years worth, and it includes cosmetic dentistry, veneers, crowns, laser bleaching, and they have a hygiene department with microscope technology. If you want an appointment, you simply call them at 615-259-5100 or go on their website, jodyjonesdds.com.
Hey Nashville, this is Crazy Charlie Saunier, executive producer of WNSR, and I'm here reminding you that Bongo Job at the Omni Nashville Hotel is the best place to start your day in the Music City. Their new limited summer hours and menu is simply the best in town. From burritos to smoothies, plus the new biscuit sandwiches and croissants, Bongo Java has you covered. Located at the Omni Nashville Hotel, 5th Avenue downtown, they're open from 7 to 11 a.m., and make sure you tell them Crazy Charlie sent you.
Hi, this is Jay Farner, CEO of Rocket Mortgage. Making the right financial decisions has never been more important. We can help guide you to those right decisions now, when they matter most. Mortgage rates are near historic lows. So when you call 8338-ROCKET or visit us at rocketmortgage.com to start your refinance, you'll be well on your way to saving money every month. The rate today on our 30-year fixed-rate mortgage is 3.125%, APR 3.43%. Right now could be a great time for you to take some positive financial steps forward with a cash-out refinance from Rocket Mortgage, which could give you the boost that you're looking for. In addition, we may be able to help you refinance with little or no out-of-pocket costs. At Rocket Mortgage, we're committed to every client, every time, no exceptions, no excuses, giving you the best mortgage experience. Call us today at 8338-ROCKET or go to rocketmortgage.com to learn more.
Rates subject to change. Pay 2.875% fee to receive this discounted rate. Call for cost information and conditions. Equal housing lender. License in all 50 states. NMLS number 3030.
Bi-State Forecast. Your exclusive National Sports Radio WNSR SkyScan forecast for this afternoon will have clouds and showers, a high 70. Showers end this evening, remains mostly cloudy overnight, the low 42. Clouds will win a sunshine for Friday, but a cooler day with a high of 54. Utilizing the resources of the Global Network on National Sports Radio, I'm WNSR's meteorologist, Jim Rinaldi.
Sports Radio WNSR.
Every weekday afternoon, it's the Johnny Ballpark Frank Show on Nashville Sports Radio.
And welcome back, Johnny Ballpark Franks with you. Time to go back to the hotline, talk some Georgia Bulldogs. Georgia in action this week as they take on the Kentucky Wildcats up in Lexington. Chip Towers, he covers the Georgia Bulldogs for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. Chip, always a pleasure, buddy. Welcome back to the show.
Yeah, glad to be with you, Johnny. Always nice to be with you. And, you know, you can play the SRV lead-in music every time I'm on, as far as I'm concerned. That's good stuff.
I love it. Hey, where we stand now as far as the Bulldog Nation, you know, they were leading at halftime against Alabama the last time out, and then they didn't score at all in the second half. Is it one of these things where the fans just feel like that was just the first of maybe two, if not three, meetings this year?
Yeah, you know how fans are. I mean, you know, there's a lot of people out there that are, you know, furious about it and you know, and feel like it's just a referendum on their ability to win the SEC championship this year, because, you know, the thought is that they'll see Alabama again in the championship game. And, you know, perhaps there was some revelation that, you know, it's not a given that you're going to make it to Atlanta based on the offense such as you've seen it. Or as such as it was against Alabama, at least. But, you know, I think, Johnny, the reality of it is it, you know, yes, it was another loss to Alabama, and that's going to continue to be a hurdle in Georgia's mind and in the nation's mind until you clear it. But as you pointed out, you know, Georgia was leading 24-17 to the last second of the first half, and, you know, just, you know, had a couple of terrible turnovers and a couple of tough calls. And, you know, so it's, you know, a little bit closer than the score indicated. And I think if Georgia can run the table, sort of trim up the loose ends and play like they feel like they're capable of playing, they very much would like to get another crack at Alabama. But, you know, that's looking way far down the road, certainly for Kirby. You won't get him involved in any kind of discussion like that. And, you know, you got to take care of Kentucky this week, which I don't think is certainly, you know, a Everest to climb. But, you know, then the next week is Florida. And, I mean, that's going to be basically the Eastern Division playing game for all practical purposes. And, you know, Florida's, who knows, you know, who knows what to expect from them now? I mean, Dan Mullen, you know, as of this afternoon, I guarantee you, he's sitting there chewing his fingernails waiting to get that Thursday test back.
Right.
I think they won't get back until tomorrow to find out if he even has enough to play this weekend. They think they're going to, but shoot. So, I mean, it's just a weird, wacky world we live in, and a lot of things to get cleared up before we get to that game.
Yeah, Florida, 37 positive tests in the month of October alone.
Yeah, you know, if you just do the math, right? So most of those guys, I guess, are recovered and coming back out of protocol at this point. But you can't be sure, because I know six of those were new tests this week, or seven were new confirms. So those new confirms are 2 weeks out, right? And I don't know that we know who they are. The way they're handling it, you won't know until Saturday's game. So is that, you know, their fantastic tight end, or is it, you know, the third string scout team defensive end? You just don't know.
Kentucky, by the way, since 2015, it's a program under Mark Stoops that's very competitive against ranked teams. They're 6-7 versus ranked teams since 2015. And, you know, and you can make the argument they're certainly due against Georgia. You know, they've lost 10 straight games against Georgia, so it's been a while since they've got the W. But it's a team where you look at their strengths and what they're able to do as far as you know, bringing it to the table against Georgia. And we go back to that Georgia offense where I'm not sure about you, but I look at the Georgia offense and I still have question marks about the Georgia offense.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, they have plenty of questions themselves, and they're trying to get them answered. And, you know, what's lacking from Georgia's offense right now, and look, this isn't a shock. It shouldn't be. I mean, they lost 8 starters off last year's team. Really, you could say 9, you know, including quarterback Jake Fromm and, you know, every skill player of any significance except for George Pickens. Complete rebuild on the offensive line, everybody but Trey Hill. So, truly, we shouldn't be all that surprised, but, you know, they'd given glimpses early on that they were going to be okay under Stetson Bennett, but they got exposed by Alabama a little bit. And so I'm sure that's what Kentucky's sitting there thinking. I mean, they got a good defense, and I'm like you, Johnny. I was almost surprised when I, you know, look at the old record book and you see Georgia's won 10 in a row in this series, and they've been, while Kentucky's enjoyed quite the rise under Mark Stoops, they've been almost impervious to it. They've had only one of those games that's been significantly close, and that was the one where Rodrigo Blankenship introduced himself to the world with a game-winning field goal. I guess that was 3 or 4 years ago, whatever it was. The rest of them have been, you know, they've been tough, but decided, very decided in Georgia's favor. And but that's the thing about Kentucky. You know, Georgia's coming off the Alabama loss. You know they're going to be physical. You know they're going to hit hard. You know they're going to be, you know, just coming gangbusters to stuff the run. But in the grand scheme of things, Johnny, I think this worked out really good for Georgia in terms of having to reshuffle the schedule and them getting an off week this past week as opposed to having it this week before the Florida game. They were pretty beat up, and then of course Alabama exposed some things that I think they were able to concentrate on, you know, with full focus without having to get ready for another opponent. So I think it worked out pretty good for them. So it's and you know, the converse of that is here's Kentucky playing the 6th straight week, and man, they did not look good at all against Missouri. Of course, they're going to have a quarterback change for this game. Mark Stoops confirmed that this afternoon that they're going to go with Joey Gatewood. That, you know, that's good, I think, by and large. I mean, that's just a wrinkle that Georgia will be, you know, you're going to have some new stuff in there, there's no question. So it'll be a slobber knocker like they all are. But it's tough on everybody playing, you know, 10 SEC games. You know, it's really going to come down to who's healthy, both COVID and injury-wise, and then when you catch people. And I think Georgia's actually catching this one at a pretty good time.
Well, Kentucky, you know, they have one of the better offensive lines in the SEC, and they've got some solid backs, but they just haven't looked good this year at times. And, you know, it's one of these teams where, you know, being at home I think certainly helps Kentucky this week. You know, they have a disappointing loss last week to Missouri, losing 20-10. But, you know, we've seen this year where that's not necessarily a bad thing because Coach Drinkwith is doing an outstanding job with that Missouri football program. One of the things that I don't think will hold true this weekend, the winner in the last 7 games of this series, which has been all Georgia, they've won the Bulldogs in these games by, you know, scoring at least 27 points. I think scoring will be at a premium coming up, and I look more at the, you know, 24-17, 24-10, 24-13 variety. But one of the things about Kentucky, they force a lot of turnovers. And this is where, when we think about Stetson Bennett, he better be sharp because Kentucky is certainly primed to be in a position to intercept because they've already been able to intercept 9 passes already this year.
Well, you're really drilling down on what I think is the sort of paradox for Georgia this week. I mean, I think the winning formula here is for Georgia to go back to being old Georgia, right? And you try to play controlled football and run the football you know, you have better athletes than Kentucky does. I mean, it's just the old Alabama formula all the way across both lines of scrimmage. And at most positions, you're going to have the better players, so you can play that way. But as you know, as we've seen in college football, as we've seen in the SEC, and as Alabama, you know, underscored yet again, Nick Saban weighed in on it, is you have got to have explosive offense to win at the level that Georgia wants to win right now. So, you know, do you go in there with the mentality of we're just going to play man ball, Kirby ball, and just get out of, you know, squeak out a 2013 victory and move on to the next thing? Or are you going to try to fix all these things, you know, and tune up the pass game and tune up the spread and the hurry up and all that stuff that Todd Monken was hired to do here? Even though you don't really have the quarterback that you desired to have in this situation, it is what it is. So I'm fascinated by that side of this game. And what's the answer? I don't know. I don't know which one of those Georgia's going to do. I think there's an argument for both, because you can't have, you know, a short vision this year the way it's going. I mean, there's just 10 games. You're at the halfway mark, and you may not need it right now this week against Kentucky, and that could be argued whether you do or not, but you're going to need it the next week at Florida probably, and down the road for sure if you make it back to Atlanta. So I don't know what they're going to do. If I'd guess, I would say you may see a little bit more man ball this weekend, and Georgia try to get out of there, you know, with its life basically. But we'll see.
And see, this is one of these things why I really like watching Mark Stoops' Kentucky squads, especially when they play in Lexington, because he has the ability to get them believing in the fact that, hey, we can get these W's, and you know, it's those intangibles. And Kentucky's got something that they're working on that they have not been able to do since the 40s and 50s. They know that they have to get an upset on one of these games remaining in the last five, or their streak of winning seasons will come to an end at four. They're looking for their fifth straight winning season, something this program has not done since the 40s and 50s. But, you know, just something about these little intangibles, Mark Stoops, you know, almost like playing up the David versus Goliath kind of role. And I won't be stunned at all to see this game in doubt in the fourth quarter, mainly just because he has those players believing in themselves.
Well, and it's also, that's a little bit of the sort of smoke and mirrors of, if you look over those 10 games that Georgia's won in a row here, most of them by double digits, but they were closer than that in most cases. You know, they're usually pretty close through the half. Georgia in the past has been able to distance itself in the second half because of its great depth, and depth of talent that just was just superior to Kentucky. I don't know whether that's the case right now. And I think the Joey Gatewood factor is not a small thing. I mean, anytime you introduce a new player into the equation, you don't know what you're going to get. And, you know, Eddie Grant's had some time. I mean, you know, there was already buzz surrounding this kid before Terry Wilson got hurt in this last game. So how different will they be? Will it be significantly different? Will it be something that the team rallies around? Because this offense has been atrocious to this point. So, you know, they're looking for something to rally around. And, again, I think it's well-timed for Kentucky just doing it at this point. I mean, what have they got to lose? I mean, this is –
absolutely.
They should have a great – you know, they should be really excited about Saturday because they have a chance to knock off the top five team, and they probably feel pretty good about their odds of doing that.
Yeah, they have not beat, by the way, a top 10 team. You have to go all the way back to 2010, so they're certainly due. But they have had successes against top 25 teams. And Joey Gatewood, you know, as far as buzz, you know, I still remember when he was competing for the starting job with the Auburn Tigers. So he's probably looking at this as an opportunity to say, you know, learn from the past mistakes and ready to take this team and let it be his own.
Well, it's the ultimate wild card, isn't it? You know, and you know, it's too bad that he wasn't able to get eligible when they played Auburn earlier in the year. But you know, I mean, that wasn't a small thing Greg Sankey did, and Georgia's already run into that once with Cade Mays, having to play him against Tennessee. It turned out okay retrospectively, but you know, you couldn't be sure. And you know, Joey Gatewood, he's one of those guys. I mean, if I'm not mistaken, he was like the number three dual threat quarterback in the country when he signed. with Auburn coming out of school. So, I mean, this guy's got a lot to prove. He got stuck behind Bo Nix, and, you know, that looks like a situation, being a legacy and everything else that's, you know, kind of Auburn about that young man. You know, he just didn't see the light of day over there. So, you know, right now he's looking pretty smart with Terry Wilson going out with an injury and being a senior and, you know, him having an opportunity against a top five team as a sophomore.
Before we let you go, remind everybody again the best ways to keep up with your coverage of the Bulldogs and the SEC.
Yeah, follow me on Twitter, CTowersAJC, and just go to AJC.com. We have a special button for Georgia Bulldogs, and you can read everything that I have written on this and the Kentucky Wildcats. I had a chance to talk to John Clay earlier this week. Does a great job covering the Cats, and so there's a lot of good stuff there.
Hey, we appreciate you, buddy. Have a wonderful rest of the week. We'll talk soon.
All right. See you soon.
Thank you. That's Chip Towers once again with the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. This segment brought to you by our friends with Strike and Spare Family Fun Centers, now with two enhanced locations here in the Middle Tennessee area. Besides bowling, games, food, drink, and entertainment, we're also talking about Hendersonville at Circus World and now Murfreesboro in the old Sears building in the Stones River Mall. These two enhanced experiences also includes laser tag, roller skating, bumper cars, time freak, laser maze, and a virtual reality roller coaster. Plus, you can always keep up with your favorite teams as well on the TVs located throughout. Other locations to serve you include Hermitage, Donaldson Plaza, and the Tusculum area. For more information, you can go online at strikeandspare.com. All locations open 7 days a week, including holidays. And remember, there's never a bad time for a good time at Strike and Spare Family Fun Centers.
Good afternoon. We're still looking live at this crash here on Briley Parkway westbound, right at Gallatin Pike. Again, it's up against the wall here. Hopefully they'll move it sooner than later here on Briley Parkway, again at Gallatin Pike. 4300 block of Lebanon Pike, still over there working that accident. Still heavy traffic to the south, 65 down into Williamson County, all the way into Spring Hill. Check out the Andre Chicken Sandwich, now available at Prince's Hot Chicken, 5814 Nolensville Pike. I'm Commander Chuck, your on-time traffic.
Want to talk to you about the folks at Doobie Orthopedics, and I know that you're going to sit there and go, Plaz, what do you know about that? And the truth of it is, not much. Until about a year ago, right about now, I ended up with some really bad shoulder and neck problems, and I had no idea where to turn. A friend of mine suggested Doobie Orthopedics, and you know what? That friend was dead on right. I find out now they've got over 30,000 customers. There's a reason for that. They are really good at what they do. I ended up choosing the Hermitage location, but they have locations all over town. Frist Boulevard was where I was, with a phone number of 391-4545. I got the individual one-on-one attention that I needed. They set up a plan, and you know what? The plan worked to perfection. I highly recommend Doobie Orthopedics.
Attention homeowners that have ever had a broken appliance. That's a joke, right? We've all had broken appliances. I own a home just like you and have found a way for as little as a dollar a day to have all the major appliances in my home on a warranty plan. They're guaranteed to be fixed or replaced. You know how expensive an air conditioner, the heating system, a washing machine, dryer, water heater, or refrigerator can be. For about a dollar a day, all your major appliances are protected in case they break. Unless you're Daddy Warbucks or the Monopoly guy and you don't care about money, call my friends at the Home Service Club now and get a warranty on your major appliances. It's a free call and the first month is free. But be one of the first 25 people to call within the next 10 minutes.
800-870-6217. 800-870-6217. 800-870-6217. That's 800-870-6217.
Last election, millions of voters were unable to cast their ballots. Why? No game plan.
Time to make a play. Let's go.
NFL Votes is a league-wide initiative to support and encourage voter education, registration, and activation efforts of players, clubs, and fans from now until Election Day.
That's what we do. It's our time.
Join the NFL family by making your game plan today and making your voice heard this November.
Yes!
Visit NFL.com/votes to learn more.
Are you struggling to feed your family? If your family gets free or reduced price school meals, you may qualify to receive money for groceries through the PEBT program. Visit TennesseeMeals.com or call 866-311-4287. The deadline is soon. That's TennesseeMeals.com, 866-311-4287. Brought to you by this station, the Tennessee Justice Center, and the Tennessee Department of Human Services.
Call the Johnny Ballpark Frank Show now, 615-844-5600.
Welcome back, Johnny Ballpark Franks with you, along with Zach Williams, 615-844-5600. Tonight, week 8 of the NFL kicks off, 7:20 kickoff for this one is Carolina, 3-4 on the season, playing host to the 1-6 Atlanta Falcons. I will say this, Atlanta's only win this year did occur the last time they were on the road, a road win against Minnesota. I'm going to take the Falcons tonight and the point and a half. Just a little, something tells me, especially with the delay for another week or so for Christian McCaffrey not back, Atlanta will be able to put some points on the board. And so now the question will be, can the defense do something as far as slowing down Carolina? Or I mean, they're not going to stop anybody. But I'm going to go with Atlanta tonight.
It could be. I don't know. This one's an ugly one to make a pick on in my mind, just because you can't trust Matt Ryan in primetime. You can't trust the Falcons defense anytime. And, you know, the Panthers have come back so hot recently. This is what they've been able to do. DJ Moore had fell off for so long in that receiver core. In the last three games, he's had 93 yards in the last three games, exactly 93 in each one of them. And then, of course, Robbie Anderson's had new birth, a new life once he got away from Adam Gase, like everybody else who has. And Teddy Bridgewater has been a reliable quarterback. And they're, you know, their defense, their secondary is not good for the Panthers either. Their upfront pressure on the stopping the run hasn't been too bad. So, you know, I could see this one becoming a shootout between two teams that, you know, don't have very good defenses. It would be better if Christian McCaffrey was playing. I would say I'm taking the Panthers 100%.
Oh, I would too.
But
absolutely.
If, you know, without him there, Mike Davis has been okay. He's been back and forth. You know, he's filled the role at least as much as you can for Christian McCaffrey being gone. But this could be a very close game and a very high scoring game. I would take the over for sure in this one, whatever it is.
How bizarre is it, by the way, when we look at the schedule this weekend with some of these games and the fact that, you know, it's like difference of night and day when we see the Steelers 6-0 traveling to take on the 5-1 Baltimore Ravens squad, and then also same kind of ramifications as far as a division lead on the line, because Sunday night you get the 2-5 Dallas Cowboys taking on the 2-4-1 Philadelphia Eagles, and first place at stake in that ball game.
Oh, go look at I think it was the NFL. They put out like a graphic that showed all the division leaders in the NFL, and 5-1, 6-0 for the Steelers, 5-1,
yeah,
and then you got 2-4-1. It just looked terrible.
I mean, look, somebody's got to win the division, and the interesting part about it, they would actually host a playoff game. And
that
they
has
could be,
to change.
They could be two games under 500. Whoever wins that division easily could be 2 to 3 games under 500 at the end of the year.
Would anybody be upset if the NFL stepped in and was like, look, you don't deserve this, you
no,
don't get it?
No, see, look, Seattle hosted the Saints a few years back where they had a losing record. So, you know, teams with losing records have actually won.